My name is Michael, and I have the privilege of reading today's Bible reading. We're reading from Song of Songs, chapter 5, verses 8 to 16. It's a little bit small, but hopefully I will read with clear diction. Okay. Chapter 5, verse 8. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my beloved, what will you tell him? Tell him I am faint with love. How is your beloved better than others, most beautiful of women? How is your beloved better than others that you so charge us? My beloved is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is pure as gold. His hair is wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beds of spice yielding perfume. His lips are like lilies dripping with myrrh. His arms are like rods of gold set with topaz. His body is like polished ivory decorated with lapis lazuli. His legs are pillars of marble set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as a cedars. His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my beloved. This is my friend, daughters of Jerusalem.
So we've been looking at love, sex, and intimacy in this part of the Bible. And we've been doing this for a number of weeks. And it's not really possible to do a whole series about sex and sexuality without at least touching on the theme of pornography, because pornography is so prevalent in our society. So today, we're going to be talking about pornography. Are you excited? Are you ready for a talk about pornography? I heard of one growth group in another church where they all turned up to a men's group, and one of the leaders said, "Hey, tonight we're going to talk about pornography. Let's go around the circle. You're first." And they went around the circle. How awkward does that sound, right? Because we know people are embarrassed about this topic. Believe it or not, that group apparently went quite well and was transformative for some of the people there that night. But the reason we can't imagine it and we wouldn't want to be in a group like that is because talking about pornography is awkward. Hearing about it, maybe a little more, we're interested to hear people speak on it. I was talking to a number of people in the last month or two explaining that I'm going to speak about pornography at church. And they were like, "What? Really?" And they were so interested. So if you've tuned in today because you want to hear what churches say about pornography, we're so glad you've joined us. Welcome. I want to start with a story. Let's kick it off with this picture of Dan and Jen. Now, they look happy, but it's really easy to be happy in a photo, isn't it? Because this is actually, they've been on a pretty long journey together, and there's a fair bit of grief and struggle in their backstory. They look happy. They're at least happy to share their stories so that it might benefit others. And I heard this on a podcast. They're a Christian church-going couple. They were getting ready for Christmas in 2012, December. But she calls it D-Day because it's the day that she found out that her husband has secrets. And they were meant to be wrapping Christmas presents that night, but instead, they ended up unwrapping his whole secret life. And this is what he said on the podcast about his life. He said, "My whole life I've been putting on a wrapping around who I was, just so that you could see something that I thought you wanted to see. I didn't tell my friends, I didn't tell my youth pastor, I didn't tell my parents, anybody. Because I had this expectation that nobody would want to hear about that. And if they did, furthermore, they would think I was a terrible person. So I just kept it hidden. My first exposure to pornography was when I was about 10 or 11 years old. So it's not like this was new. It had been an ingrained habit for a long time. And it did allow me to get comfortable with hiding that aspect of my life And in fact, it made it easy for me to explore the sexual desires that I felt, in what I felt was an uncomplicated or an unrisky way. Now, there's a few layers to this story that I wanted to draw out. Firstly, this language of wrapping. I find it really helpful, wrapping and unwrapping, because it's saying that there's this kind of hidden self, when someone's struggling in private with something that they don't want to tell anyone, that there's this hidden self, and then there's this kind of wrapping that you put on so that you can go places, so that people will look at you in a particular way. And so unwrapping is actually quite a bit of a journey of an identity thing. I find it a little scary that he was first exposed to pornography at 10 or 11 years old. Now, half my kids are past that age, and as a parent, I really don't feel they're ready to see this stuff. I find it interesting to hear why Dan wanted to keep watching porn. If you ask him why he did it, he explained, it's quite insightful. He talked about exploring his sexual desires without complication, and how easy it was. Just take a phone out of your pocket, type in some words, and you can explore your sexual desires. Or you could get on your computer while working from home and begin to explore your sexual desires. I find it scary that he became comfortable hiding this aspect of his life, because the word comfortable is an interesting one, is it? The idea that you could be comfortable having a double self, or comfortable hiding. There's some sort of, you know, ability that the conscience is no longer talking to you, saying you should feel uncomfortable, but you've become so ingrained in this that you're okay to live this kind of double life. So this is quite a story, brave to go on a podcast and share it, but so helpful because it helps us to see what it could be like to be a Christian and walk into a church when struggling with pornography, this image of wrapped up life and a hidden life. This is how a lot of people walk into church. So I'm going to show you some statistics from America. This is from Barna Research Group. This is fresh data that was released last month about pornography consumption in America. And you can see there that 54% of church-going Christians identified as being those who watch porn at some level or have recently, whereas 61% of the general population are engaged in seeing porn at some level. Now, what this says, okay, this is American stats, it's not Christchurch St. Ives, but what it says is that if it's indicative of the society we live in and the churches around, that there are a lot of people here today and watching and engaging in the life of this church who might be feeling a little bit tense or anxious right now because of the topic we're raising. And just to see, over half. Now, what is pornography? It's defined in relation to arousal a lot of the time. It's this idea of seeking out something that helps you to feel aroused. Most people think of that in terms of photo and video, but in speaking to a number of people in the congregation, I've become more aware of how significant narrative and written form and books and story have become in this space. So I think what I'm saying here is pornography is notoriously hard to define, but it has to do with seeking out something for arousal, and that is something that many Christian people are engaged in. Here's another slide which shows porn is being thrown at children more and more and more. So different generations, different stages. The 25 to 30-year-olds, 27% of them would identify that they saw porn before puberty. And you see that the older, the less likely that would have been. So what this means is more and more and more children are being exposed to stuff before they're even thinking about sex. And that's just the culture and the world we live in. It's not our children's fault, but we've got to figure out how do we support our children when it's quite likely at a very young age that they're going to be exposed to something like this. And we've got to help them to take responsibility for how they're going to act when that thing happens, which means we get a bit nervous as parents. How do we actually talk to our kids about it in a way that normalizes the conversation and makes it safe to talk about, but it's also awkward because they're not even necessarily at first thinking about sex at a young age? How do you feel about where we're at as a society? Is this porn culture a good or a bad thing? Well, you could check out many, many TED Talks if you want to think about all the different people out there exploring the wisdom of pornography and the harms of pornography. It speaks quite freely in all the TED Talks. There's talks about how it's harmful for self, how it's harmful for relationships, and how actually it has a significant impact on society. And here we're hearing about sex slavery on the screen. Now, you don't need to look very far to see, if you wanted to, the destructive nature of pornography. The Bible says very similar things. Although, instead of just speaking of it being unhealthy, it also speaks of it in terms of immorality. So you know the word porneia in Greek is the word we translate into the English Bibles as sexual immorality. Pornography is writing sexual depictions. And this whole concept of pornography, it's not hard to see that it's derived from the word sexual immorality in the Bible, and immorality is another layer that the Bible would add to this whole conversation. That's why so many people are walking into churches feeling wrapped and maybe trapped in a shell. Because you've got your life of what you do in private, but you know what the minister's going to say when he gets up to talk about pornography? But did you know that the American stats, 4 out of 5 church pastors have a history with pornography? And 1 out of 5 American church pastors are currently in a temptation battle to try and resist pornography. So the goal is not actually to be a minister standing and pointing and shaming. It's to invite you to begin to unwrap yourself. I know you might be feeling anxious if you're listening today. The goal is to see that you can be free of these destructive behaviors. I hope that you'll see that the church is actually a safe place to begin to unwrap yourself. And that's my goal for the end of today. Let me relate this back to Song of Songs. Okay, so we get to Song of Songs, and as we've already heard in this series, Song of Songs is a yes to sex. It's a yes to sexual pleasure. And it's a yes to sexual union, but it's a no to dehumanizing sex. And we get this contrast between the couple and this kind of Solomon character. I'll come back to that in a sec. This song celebrates, I get the point, the song celebrates the couple's model of love as being personal, emotional, and intimate. I'm going to zoom in on that personal, emotional, and intimate nature of their relationship. Every time the man leaves, she absolutely misses him. Chapter 5, verse 6. My heart sank at his departure. I looked for him but did not find him. This is different to hookup culture where people come and go and you're happy when they go. This is like my heart sank and I'm emotionally bound up with him. She's always looking for him. Chapter 3, verse 1. I looked for the one my heart loves. Have you seen the one my heart loves? There's this focus on the eyes and seeing. I'm looking, I'm searching. I want to see the one my heart loves. There's a connection that's different to pornography because there's a connection between the eyes and the heart and the one that you love. Her eyes are connected to her heart, and her heart is connected to this particular person. It's personal. It's emotional. And in fact, she runs around the city looking for her beloved, and she cries out among all the men, "If you find my beloved, tell him that I faint with love," as her eyes are constantly searching for her one man. And her friends notice this, and it leads them to ask, chapter 5, verse 9, "How is your beloved better than the others?" This is the reading we had. How is your beloved better than the others? And she answers, "My beloved is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. He's a 1 in 10,000. She then goes on to describe visually his body from head to chest to legs to toes, and then back up to his lips, and ends with this, verse 16, his mouth is sweetness itself, he's altogether lovely, this is my beloved, this is my friend, daughters of Jerusalem. So it's very visual, but it's different to pornography, because do you notice the language of beloved and friend? This is personal, emotional, connected. The eyes are connected to the heart, connected to the person. So that's the personal, emotional, and intimate example of love that the Song of Songs is celebrating. But it stands in contrast to Solomon, this character Solomon. And the song critiques, this is the next point I wanted to make up on the screen if I get the next point. The song critiques Solomon's model of love as being impersonal and self-gratifying, treating women as objects. You might remember this next picture from a few weeks ago with Solomon, the king, the character Solomon walking down the stairs and all of the women in the background, which are his many wives, concubines, and the virgins beyond number. And so what Tom was explaining as he opened up the relationship between Solomon and this book is he was helping us to see a few weeks back that there is this subtle critique of this character Solomon right throughout. And I think that's what we get when we pick up chapter 6, verse 8. Because this is the man talking about his beloved, and he says this. Verse 8, 60 queens there may be, and 80 concubines, and virgins beyond number. But my dove, my perfect one, is unique, the only daughter of her mother, the favorite of the one who bore her. This is really clever, kind of social commentary within a song. Because what he's doing there is he's actually contrasting his unique individual love for his beloved to the many virgins and concubines and wives. He is zooming in on her as his perfect one, his dove. She's not an object. He describes her as the daughter of her mother, the favorite of the one who bore her. So he's identifying her and dignifying her and seeing her for who she is in a family context. She's got a mum, and a mum actually has, she's her favorite because she's the only daughter. And so this is very personal. It's also reciprocal. Just as she called him her one in 10,000, so he is saying she is his perfect one among all of the virgins and concubines and wives. And just as she scanned her eyes down his body, so he goes on to describe her physically, and he works from her legs through her thighs to her navel to her breast to her head to her crown, and he's mesmerized by her eyes. And you do get this very visual, you know, love that's reciprocated between them. They love to look at each other, but they do so with their eyes connected to their heart and their heart connected to their one. And that's how it differs to things like pornography. So that's what I think this passage is doing. I think it's saying you could A, have virgins beyond number, like Solomon, or you can B, have your one true love, but they're not compatible. They're mutually exclusive. You can't have eyes for many and eyes for one at the same time. They don't fit together. Or if we were to like take this back to our topic, you can't have a healthy marriage and pornography at the same time, because eyes for many betrays your eyes for the one. They're not compatible. It's betrayal. It damages the union of that one relationship, and it brings many others in. And it's not just a problem currently in intimacy within a marriage, but also a history of pornography affects in some ways future relationships as you learn to dehumanize people and you bring that into the bedroom. You can grow and be freed and heal and mend, but pornography and marriage are incompatible. Now that sounds a little different to what you're hearing around in culture. Because in culture, we celebrate sex like Solomon with his many virgins. And this is, you know, from the more gentle sitcoms right through to the heavier sex scenes. And I'm thinking back how I've really enjoyed shows like How I Met Your Mother and Friends and those ones. You've always got your Barney Stinson character, your Joey Tribbiani, who we've all, you know, would love to have as a friend because he's just a nice guy. But then came Game of Thrones. And I remember when that came out and everyone was like, oh, is this a little bit too intense, you know, watching Game of Thrones? And then like Grand Theft Auto, the game that kids are playing, and it's like, yeah, I'm not sure I'm happy letting my kids play that game. And then came 50 Shades of Grey, and you were like, wow, like I didn't know books had this kind of power and ability to do what this is doing. And I guess now we've got lots of reality TV sex, which is kind of pixelated and censored, but, you know, in the end, it's kind of like a big celebration of sex like Solomon. That's just where our culture's at. I'm not going to change that. We could play a part in trying to change that, but that's just where our culture's at. And I'm not sure how much TV shapes us versus we make what goes on TV, like which direction is it? But when you look at the research again on people in real life, not just on TV, this is what we see, this is Barna again. That when you ask people what's the purpose of sex, at the moment, more and more, it's increasing in popularity to talk about sex as self-expression and personal fulfillment. It's about me. It's about what I get out of it. And in decreasing number, it's about expressing intimacy between two people who love each other. So we are moving away from Song of Songs and we're moving towards sex like Solomon as a culture. For the men in our city, she is no longer thought of as the daughter of her mother, but the object of my desire. And sadly, in marriage, she can become my average one among many fantasies. For the women in our city, he's no longer my beloved, but my betrayer. I say that in a little bit of a lopsided way, speaking specifically and directly to men, because when it comes to pornography, men are more regularly the betrayer. But I'm also becoming increasingly aware that pornography consumption among women has quadrupled in the last decade. And having spent some time speaking to some very helpful and insightful women in our congregation, I've just come to understand how much, you know, arousal is related to narrative and love story. And it's not just in picture form, but the books, and also books that are being produced for children and teenagers these days being described as fairy porn and, you know, fantasy fiction where you imagine sex with others, and this is what kids are taking home from the library and you can buy them from Big W. This is the world we live in. If you want to think more about pornography and from a female perspective, I want to highlight this excellent podcast that was recommended to me, Her Theology, and there's this episode, Hidden Sin, Helping Women Win the Battle Over Porn and Love Addiction. A very helpful listen. But for now, I just want to wrap up with five kind of takeaways as we bring this to a close. Firstly, let's stop pretending. There is an elephant in the room. And there's a whole lot of pornographic viewing and there's this kind of struggle in the life of the church, but no one's talking about it. We know what the minister's going to say. He's going to get up and give another sermon saying, let's flee from sexual immorality. But you're like, no one's talking about it. We've got to make it safe to talk about because it's an elephant in the room. Secondly, that's my next point. Let's make it safe to talk about. If you come and talk to a pastor like myself or another pastoral member of the staff team, you're not going to be shamed. You're not going to be thrown out of church. Actually, we'll say something like, thanks for respecting me as someone you thought of as a safe person to talk to. I'd love to support you. How can I help? And we can work together on a plan. We won't ring your growth group. We won't call you out. We won't tell your spouse. And we know the importance of confidentiality as you begin to unpick the challenges that you're facing. Now, you might not feel comfortable talking to a pastor, but what about a friend in the life of Christ Church St. Ives? Is there someone who you would consider that you could talk to? Just make sure that they're a safe person, by which I mean they're able to handle confidentiality, because you know that you're going to struggle a little bit opening up with someone, then finding out that they're going and telling others. Confidentiality is really important, but also someone who's got emotional capacity to walk alongside you. If you're not sure that you have a friend or someone in the church or a pastor that you're ready to talk to, or if you're really worried about the level of anxiety that it's causing you to open up about this, then can I encourage you to go see a counsellor, because there's many specialists in this field. And Sally Sims and I, we worked on a web page with a list of counsellors that are specialising in this space. And we've put that up on the Christchurch website. Also, if you go on Facebook members today, you'll see a link to this. This is a page where you can get resources to help you think and resources to help you act and verses to help you pray. If you're not sure if you're ready to talk to someone, this is somewhere you can go to think more carefully about what to do next. And also, there's an extensive list of counselors that specialize in this space. And Sally and I spent a long time putting this together, and we trust you'll find it helpful. So please do check that out. Third, let's be realistic about how hard it is to beat if it's particularly a long-term addiction. For some of us, this started when we were very young, took about 10 and 11 years old, and building habits from that age. And if you've kind of taken thousands of little steps towards this, to imagine that you would all of a sudden just switch it off is just... The Lord doesn't promise to give you a whole new brain and body when you put your faith in Him. There's actually some rewiring that needs to take place. Pornography is addictive. Here's this next slide of addiction. Pornography is addictive because watching porn releases dopamine and other brain chemicals, which gives you great feelings. And so you crave more. But the thing about craving more is when you watch it the next time, it may not bring as much dopamine the more and more you watch. So you need to go further and deeper, and it becomes, you know, more and new, and you're searching out new things. And this is where people move towards aggressive pornography, you know, partner control, domination, all these kinds of difficult things that are normalized through addiction. The good news is, because of like the ability to the brain is plastic, it's neuroplasticity, you can actually rewire your brain through changing your habits. The good news is, even if you are stuck in an addiction cycle, you can make progress and you can heal and develop your brain in new directions. But you are going to need to have a long-term perspective, and you're going to need to have people walking alongside you. Fourthly, don't be a cow, be a buffalo. This is leadership wisdom, or a fable from the leadership world, where they talk about cows and buffaloes. Apparently in Colorado, in East Colorado, there's a big mountain range, and when the storm cloud comes over the mountain, it's a huge thing that the cows try and run away from. And so they're running away from this massive storm, thinking that they'll get away from it, but they're too slow because they're cows, and the storm comes over and they run with the storm, and it lasts longer and it's worse than the buffaloes, because the buffaloes charge and they go straight through the storm as quick as possible and they come out the other side. And when we apply this to talking about pornography, you could try and run away from breaking free of the wrapping and hide it for longer and run into it and go further and deeper, but being like a cow, it's going to just cause more damage to you and to your relationships, to the people around you and to society. Or you can face it, run at that storm. It's not going to be easy. But the quicker you do it, the less damage it'll cause, and the more hope and the more freedom you will see. My fifth point is really a really important one, and I'm really drawing to a close, I promise. Jesus brings help and healing. We're a church. We're all about Jesus. Remember who Jesus is. He is God become human. And in becoming human, he experiences every temptation that is common to us. In fact, I would say he experiences temptation worse than us, because he has authority like Solomon to take whatever he wants. But what does he do? He suffers and dies on a cross. He chooses suffering instead of saying yes to temptation. Why? So that he can help and heal us. This is what it says in the verse that we read earlier. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted. Jesus comes to free you, to help you, and to heal you. It's hard for you to imagine sometimes to come to Jesus, as Pete said before, but he is the only one that you can run to for ultimate help and healing. Because in the language of Hebrews, he is a high priest who came to atone for sins and to redeem us so that we could have a clean conscience, completely free from guilt and shame. Church is where sexually broken people run to Jesus for help and healing. So if you're feeling convicted today, this is my close. I invite the band to come join. If you're feeling convicted today about pornography use, it's time to unwrap yourself and be free. What's stopping you from stopping? Is there anything that you lack? If you have Jesus to wash you clean, if you have a community here to be alongside you to support you, if you have medical professionals ready to help, what is stopping you from stopping? It's exhausting living a double life. So why don't you begin to unwrap yourself and come and be free?